Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 124. Of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger, alongside Frank Saravalli. I'm in Edmonton. Frank's in Philadelphia. We got East and West, Canada, U.S. Always covered. And Frank, we're into the final day of the NHL regular season. And I can't believe how many scenarios that we got to get to. We're going to have Brad Meyer, who just retired after a 23-year career as an NHL official. He'll join us today on the show. And last night, quite a night for you and I for similar but different reasons.
Yeah. So you go first. Noah comes back, your nephew, Noah Greger, with the Sharks to Edmonton. I know how special it was a few months back when he played his first game in Edmonton, but the start that he got last night against the Oilers had to be pretty cool to watch.
Well, dude, I can tell you, obviously, with my gig, there's the only negative, and it's a small negative, is when you get into the media eventually, you're not really a fan.
About this. There's nothing to root for. And you almost feel like someone that, and an odd person or someone hanging out at the game that's like a bystander because you're not as into it as a fan is.
No. And so obviously with my nephew now playing, when I get a chance to see him live, I don't sit in the press box. You know, I get tickets and I sit in the crowd. And so last night, one of my buddies said, because I brought my wife and my son and my mother-in-law to this game, and one of my buddies, we have this loge section so you can sit four people together at a table.
Nice.
So we were there and, we're sitting down and, watching the game. And, it's funny because I was telling one of my buddies, Noah's kind of due because against the Ducks, they lost that game, but his line with Bortolo, they had a ton of chances. And so he comes in and he snipes that one. And I haven't, it was just spontaneous for me, Frank. Like I jumped out of my seat and I was like, yeah. And then I was just like, effing rights, and I'm not a big swear. And, I'm kind of going nuts. And then, we just sit down and then they're announcing the goal and then he scores a second goal. And I wasn't sure at first, cause it was at the other end. If he got credit for it or not, but still I'm like, my son's like, dad, I think he scored that one too. And we're just like, oh my goodness. It's
the
great.
Hat trick watches on in the first, few minutes of the game.
And there's people around me, like obviously there's some diehard Oilers fans sitting around me. And I, the one guy, when he scored again, I'm standing up. I'm like, sorry, boys, that's my nephew. And all of a sudden they're like, yeah, okay. That's they're totally fine with it. And so my son, though, the part that made me laugh, my son's very much a rule follower. So in our house, we have a jar on the kitchen counter that if you do certain things, you got to pay up. So it's, if you swear, which, definitely got to pay up. If my son, if you lick your knife, you got to pay up. And for my son, he had a tendency, we'd sit at the table and he would just get up randomly from the table. So we had to put in a 25-cent fine if he just gets up from the dinner table without asking to be excused.
Jeez, guys are sticklers over there.
We have all these things and, just kind of teach him some manners and basic stuff. Same with us. Like the licking knife was probably more me than anyone else. And the swearing was actually probably my wife. And so my son's sitting there and there was if you say the F word, it was like $10 fine. And so when I said that at the time, and I didn't even really realize it when Noah scored again, I'm like, this is effing believable. And after the second goal was sitting there, my son leans over. He's like, dad, you have to put $20 in the swear jar when we get home. And I'm just like, what?
You're like, well, yeah, worth it.
You said the F word twice. I'm like, yeah, but it's worth it. You know, and it's so late and it's so funny. After the we're riding home in the car and he's pretty excited. And he's an Oilers fan because he's a young kid. And so he's like, Dad, like Noah scored and the Oilers won. So he was super happy. And as I pick him out of the car, I'm carrying him in the house. He's half asleep. I put him in bed. He's like, Dad, make sure you put your $20 in the jar. And I was just like, get out of here, you little
rogue. Who gets that money? Where does it go?
Well, it kind of goes into a family fund. And then we... A
vacation fund?
Yeah. Well, yeah, probably at this rate. But more so like we'll go for dinner or something. But yeah, man, I can tell you that. Like seeing him play a month ago was kind of surreal. I was just very caught up. And now it's his second game. It's a little bit more relaxed. But man, when he scored, like that brought me back to the WHL final game 7 when he was with Prince Albert. And I was there in PA for game 7 with my son and my brother and the old Art Hauser Arena. It's a small barn. You know how those junior barns mm-hmm. are. And the roof's really low in PA. And it was sold out crowd. They're playing Vancouver. And they won 3-2 in overtime. And Noah had 2 goals and assist that game. And I haven't cheered. Like that was probably still the most exciting game I've been to personally. Like last night, it's not a playoff game. It's not game 7, but it was still, it's an NHL goal that you see live. And like
his quarter of his total goal scored this season.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that's it.
I mean, I honestly, you said due, like he's been overdue 259 shots this year. What did you say earlier? He couldn't score into the ocean right now. Yeah, and yeah. to see him get paid off with 2 goals in his hometown or close to it, with family there, pretty awesome.
Well, and probably one of my favorite moments was, so I look and where my mom was sitting in my seats and where my seats are is in the attacking zone twice for the visiting team. And so when Noah scored and he veered to the left, that's right where my sister and mom were sitting. So they got like perfect. A perfect eye view. They actually got on the broadcast, I guess. And then his other grandma was sitting right below me at the other end of the ice. And so in the third, when Scott Reedy scored for the Sharks, she's wearing a Sharks jersey. She's in row 1. She's like 75. She stands up and she bangs on the glass. I was dying. I thought it was so awesome. So yeah, it's just fun to be a fan again. So I can say that, like I see for fans who are going to get into the playoff games now, like last night to me, that's as emotional as I'll get for a game. And it was like a playoff game to be that amped up. And I can see how fans, like you kind of forget that feeling and it's fun to have it for a few nights a year. Mm-hmm. And so you got to take your son to his favorite team.
Yeah. I was emotional for a whole different set of reasons. Like as a parent, and I'm sure anyone listening will understand this. Like there's some days when you're a parent, you just want to bottle up and see if you can save it. Because like it was just such a cool day. My son Christian is a hockey fan. He roots for a lot of teams, but he, for whatever reason, and I can't figure it out. I can't explain it. He picked the Islanders as his favorite team. And so I don't even know anyone who's an Islander fan. Like I hate Long Island. It's a pain in the ass to get to from Philly, everything about it. The team had been no good for so long. I went to so many lifeless games on Long Island at Nassau Coliseum over the years. And I'm like, this is the team, really? And you know, it's one of those things, you're a kid, like you just like what you like. And so he had been asking me for 2 years to go to an Islander game. And I'm always, you know, it was COVID, everything else. I'm like, yeah, we'll get there. And I was kind of thinking like, maybe he'll change teams. Maybe he'll like something different. And he just asked. And so finally I totally surprised him. He went to school yesterday. No idea. I picked him up an hour early. We drove out to Long Island, went to UBS Arena, an amazing place. That was my first time in the building and it's beautiful. And it was just, he was so excited, so happy to be there. You know, we had good seats, you know, 8th or 9th row, and he was just thrilled all day long. And so to do that and get that experience to surprise him, it was one of those days I won't forget.
Oh, and I saw he had his jersey. So, hey, you know, you're there as an Islander fan, he's fitting right in. And yep. And then they won, which makes it even better.
I know. He was like, the Capitals stink. I'm like, no, Dad. I'm like, no, Krish, like the Caps are actually pretty good and they're going to the playoffs this year. It's the Islanders who haven't been very good.
Yeah, but the Islanders right now, man, they're playing spoilers. So yeah, it's, you know what, it's kind of cool that sports can evoke a lot of different emotions for different reasons. And, you know, for people with they go for their families to watch it, or, you know, if you're ever lucky enough to have someone, you know, play there. What was cool, like there was so many, friends of mine and people that from Beaumont, they were like, my phone's blown off. They're like, oh my goodness, the kid's on fire. So yeah, it was pretty, it's pretty fun to see. And so now here we are, it's the final day of the regular season.
Can you imagine this, by the way? Like, we have known the 8 playoff teams, Jay, since January in the East, and we get to the final day and not a single matchup is set in stone. How's that possible?
Yeah, it is. It's nuts in the East. And in the only matchups that are set are Edmonton, LA for sure. We know it. The Edmonton opens up on Monday, and then Minnesota and St. Louis, but we don't know or did Minnesota's win last night guarantee them?
Nope.
No, it doesn't.
Could not be clinched last night. No, it
can't be clinched. So we don't know who's got home ice
because St. Louis has the tiebreaker. Yeah. And so if they tie in points, it goes to St. Louis, which can still happen tonight.
Yeah. And so in the East, you've got a boatload of scenarios. Tampa Bay lost last night. So now, and Boston won. So if Boston wins or even gets a point and Tampa loses, then Boston's third. They would go to Toronto. Tampa would go to Carolina. And then Pittsburgh and Washington still have to decide which one is going to go to Florida and who's going to go to the New York Rangers. It's unreal that we have to wait until tonight. I'm sure this, like, the schedule maker's just like, boys, can you figure this out here? I got to get this done and set up and announce, because the playoffs are opening up on Monday and we only know one series for sure.
Yeah. 48 hours later or 72 hours later. It's crazy. I just can't believe that of all the opportunities, especially in the East, like, it could have been decided three nights ago and just wasn't.
Yeah. Like Tampa Bay now, like, you know,
look at Washington and Pitt. No one wants to win. Like, the Caps could have easily won their last two games against the Islanders.
Yeah.
They had their doors blown off in both games and could have easily won those to have this going away to play the Rangers in the first round. And instead, it looks most likely like they're going to get the Florida Panthers in round one.
Yeah. Well, because Columbus can play spoiler, right? Too bad Dubinsky's not there. He'd try to run Crosby probably in game 82. But you know, the interesting one to me is, so Toronto was resting. They announced it yesterday. They're resting Marner.
A lot of teams are resting.
And Campbell. So Boston beats Toronto tonight. They could then meet them again in the postseason. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, but I saw that. I believe Boston may be resting up to 8 regulars tonight.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, like, there's a lot of teams that apparently the seeding doesn't mean as much as we make it out to be, because they're just, they're resting guys. They don't care.
Yeah. Like, I do wonder if you had to pick and you're Tampa and Boston, would you face, you know, do you try to win to face Toronto or lose to face Carolina? Like, that's like, I don't think there's a great answer there.
It's probably pretty close to a toss up. I mean, those two teams finished within a couple points of each other. They both have a lot of firepower. Carolina has less baggage. Maybe that's one reason why you'd like to play them. The Maple Leafs still, like, I go back to that clip from their coach, their defensive coach, Paul McLean. Was it last year during that Amazon series when he said they've got demons under their bed, in their cars, everywhere, like in their closets? Like, the Leafs have some serious, you know, drama, some serious things that they'd like to try and slay. I think in this case, if they were to play the Lightning, it takes the heat off of some of that, because all of a sudden you're not expected to win the series.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're playing a little bit more free, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. The one concern the Leafs have to have going into the playoffs is their goals against. In the last 12 weeks, Frank, the Toronto Maple Leafs are 23rd in the NHL in goals against per game. Like, and that's basically like 12 weeks are coming up on a 3-month span. Like, that's, and I know that, you know, Jack Campbell was injured and, you know, in and out of the lineup, but that's a big concern to me. If I'm a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, like, their offense is legit. They can run with anyone. There's no argument about their offense. They got depth all throughout the lineup. They got the league's best goal scorer in Austin Matthews. There's no question, but it's rare you can do it, but it's rare that you win run and gun in the playoffs. You know, Tampa, when they won, they score a lot, but then they got Vasilevsky and they clamp things down. So
there's a lot of teams that I think are going to need to cut down. Like, I really wonder, the way Florida has scored at a historic pace this year in the salary cap era, they're now, I don't know, 15 or 20 goals up on the record for goals scored. They've also given up a decent amount. Are they going to have to change their game at all when it gets to playoff time?
That's a fair question. You know, I'm pulling it up right now as I was looking at
236 teams. Goals against. They're within. They've given up more than Tampa, more than Boston.
Yeah. But you know what, Frank? And I'm using that 12-week thing. And the only reason that's the number I've used is because that's when Jay Woodcroft took over. So I've been focusing on that. And Florida's actually got the 8th best goals against average over the last, like, they've gotten better, right? Like, it's down to 282, right? And Tampa's at 279, Edmonton's 278.
Yeah, but compare it to some of the other teams like Carolina, who won the Jennings.
Like, well, yeah, no, Carolina's. But yeah, like the Flames in the last 12 weeks, the Flames are 262 and the Panthers are 282, right? Like, they've closed the gap. They were so, you know, leaky or.
But that's a whole goal. I mean, not that matters. It's a whole goal over a 5-game series.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing is the Aaron Ekblad health factor, right?
Yep.
Like, they've got.
I'd be really curious to see what happens there.
Yeah, like they've improved their goals against the last 12 weeks without Aaron Ekblad. I wonder how much better it could get. But and if you're Florida, not like if you could let rush is always the word, but let's say he's 90%, right? You could play him in the first round, or do you wait because you feel that you can beat Washington or Pittsburgh without him and keep him for that next round?
I think you try and get him in as soon as you can. And I just from a sheer from everyone's perspective in the lineup, set the expectation, make sure the comfort level is there, give Aaron Ekblad a chance to really maybe, I don't want to say wade into it because there's never any easy nights in the playoffs, but at least so that the point where his hair isn't absolutely on fire right away.
Yeah.
Or you're injecting him into an elimination game.
Yeah, I wonder if Florida goes 11-7, you know, to just kind of ease him in and for a game or two. Teams have done it. They've done it. You know, I've looked around the league. More teams have incorporated that at different times. And, you know, if you feel that your, you know, your seventh defenseman could impact your game better than your 12th forward, and Florida's got tons of depth, right? So it's not like they would have to magically overplay someone just because they go with 11. They got lots of guys they can play significant minutes. I wonder if that's something that Andrew Burnett thinks about.
What's your take on the President's Trophy? I had this debate last night, if you want to call it a debate, but I had tweeted out that the Panthers won it. And I said, the President's Trophy gets knocked for whatever reason, but the winner has gone on to hoist the Stanley Cup 8 out of 34 times the trophy's been won.
Yeah. Oh, I think it matters for sure. Like,
what, can you think of a better predictor? You tell me one other stat that you can look at and say you have a 25% chance, a 1-in-4 shot to win the Stanley Cup. Why do people make fun of the President's Trophy?
I don't understand it either. I don't know. I think because some people think, well, if you're number one, you should always win. Well, of course not. But
that's not how it works in the NHL. No. It may work in the NBA. It may work in the NFL. It doesn't. It's not how it works in the NHL. It's a coin toss at best.
I'd love to look up, Frank, what slots came close to that? You know, like, did the number two seed win 5 times?
Apparently, the number three seed is the one has been more successful.
Oh, all
has right. been 7. I think someone actually, I found this in my mentions somewhere, like someone actually broke out a whiteboard and like wrote it all out. And apparently either the number three seed or the number five seed, they've both been pretty successful overall out of all 16, but still, okay. I know it hasn't happened in a while. I think it's the 2013 Blackhawks that were the last team to do it. And maybe that's why, but geez, 8 out of 34, like give me those odds every single time in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Oh, you would go in and you would take that all day long. And then, you know, I always wonder about the health factor, right? Like, you look at, like, UC Saros, give Nashville credit, man. Like, that was a big game for them last night. They come from behind. They beat Colorado in Colorado. And now they still might have to play them depending on what happens tonight. If all they need is 1 point.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one of those ones. I think it's still going to end up being Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know what, you look at Dallas gagging against that Arizona team, that might cost them, because, like, hey, Calgary's a really good team as well. But if I had to pick You know, I might pick like Calgary over Colorado, not by much, but that would be the team I would choose. Like Nashville and Calgary, Frank, like there's certain series I want to see. I want to see Nashville, Calgary, Minnesota and St. Louis. That's going to be an absolute war. I can't wait to watch that series. I look at like Toronto and Tampa is very intriguing. Like the Boston, Toronto, though, from the chaos in me, I want it, but there's something about like Toronto and Tampa could be one of the more high scoring series we've seen in a long time. So that's another one I'd love.
Maybe just one of the better hockey first round series we've seen in a long time.
Yeah. Like, and so, you know, like the Leafs, if they could slay the Dragon over Tampa, and I know it's not the team that's beat them, but it's 2-time defending champs. You know, that could be the boost. Cause I do wonder if there's a little bit of a mental block in Toronto, if they suddenly find themselves down in that series. So, you know, that's fascinating. The, you know, the Pittsburgh, I'm not sure about, I'm just not sure the way they played lately.
Limping into the playoffs.
Yeah. Them in Washington, kind of same thing. The Panthers to me, like the Panthers, Frank, have just been so good for so long here. It's like, I think we maybe we're underrating them a little bit. Going into the playoffs, like, do they have if they get Aaron Ekblad back, they don't have a weakness that I see.
They won 13 in a row without him.
I know.
13 in a row without their backbone on defense.
Yeah. No,
by the way, really a shame for him. You look at the start that he got off to this season, he would have been, I wouldn't say contending with Yossi or Makar, but he would definitely be on my ballot.
Hey, speaking of Yossi, man, now he's only 8th defenseman all time to have 95 points here. He is making a run. I know he's a defenseman. Frank, I did the points percentage of players, you know, involved in the percentage of their team's goals. He's the only defenseman in the top 15 and he's in top 10. And that was before he had 3 points last night. Like that is, it's ridiculous what he's doing in Nashville. He has put himself, and it's hard, you know, is it Pronger the last defenseman to win the Hart? Like it's rare and I understand it. And I'm not saying he's going to win, but he's going to get a lot of votes.
Yeah. I don't think he's winning. Makar though, like I still have some question on Minaris. Like, is it definitely Yossi for you?
Well, it's him and Makar, and I got to break down a lot of the numbers, right?
But that's my point is I know it's him and Makar, but I don't like it's, I think it's really close.
Oh no, it is, right? But when you have an historic season, it's hard to overlook that for me. Like if everything's close and then you come down to, well, this guy's done something that hasn't been done in 30 plus years in the league.
Makar's probably not going to get there tonight, but he's really close.
Yeah.
He's at 86. Like if he were to get to 90, he'd still be the 9th guy.
10th, because Yossi's 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they both kind of hit that threshold. And then we're like, is there really a difference between 90 and 95? I guess there is.
Yeah.
But yeah. Makar has 5 more goals.
He does. So yeah, no, that's a good vote, man. It's going to be close for sure. And then, you know, and that's why the Hart's different, because the value to your team, like Yossi's the only defenseman in NHL history who's going to be at 90 point. Well, sorry, second. Ray Bourque did it as well when he didn't have a forward with 90 points on their team. Like, so
no one's close on the Preds.
Yeah. Well, what's his name's at 83, Forsberg, right?
And yeah, he's missed some 10 games. Or 12 point gap between a defenseman and four is a lot.
Yeah. That is big time.
I think I've answered the question. Like I'm pretty sure it's Yossi, but it's really close.
Yeah. Hey man, I think the Hart's close. Like Johnny Gaudreau, when you look at like numbers on ice and everything, he's got a strong case. Obviously Austin Matthews scoring 60 goals has a legit case. You know, Connor McDavid's got 123 points, right? Like he's having a great season as well. So
you know, he's got sitting out in the last game, right?
I think so. Jay Woodcroft didn't go that far, but
I'm pretty sure he's sitting out on Friday.
Yeah. I think he's going to, and you know, maybe Drysdale too. So I can see it.
That's the hill that my over 125 and a half dies on. I know it's all about me, but
I'm interested to see if they play Mike Smith or not. Mike Smith has been in his last 10 starts, man, he's been the best goalie in the NHL. He's got like a 950 save percentage and a 1.68 goals against.
Keep him in the flow.
Yeah. And you know what? I looked at his numbers since Woodcroft took over in days, like how many days between games for starts for him. And when it's funny, when he has 2 days between starts, like he said, he's only had three of those starts. One of them was awful against Minnesota, but that was the Oilers' fifth game in 7 days. He's actually been 7-0 when he has 1 day between starts. And that's what the playoffs are. So, you know, I wonder how much that impacts it. But do you risk it though, Frank? On the off chance he could get injured, when I looked at his 5, 6, 7 days between games rest days, he's still got a pretty good record. So do you play him or not? I think it comes down to feel. I could see them say, hey, do we want to risk this or just put Mikko Koskinen in back-to-back?
Yeah, I'd probably still play him.
Okay. Yeah, that's funny. Well, Frank, I'm excited for this. We're going to get recently retired Brad Meyer is going to join us now on the DFO Rundown. Now we welcome to the DFO Rundown, recently retired former NHL official. He had 1,460 regular season games as an official, almost 100 in the playoffs. He was in the 2017 Stanley Cup final, and he had a 23-year career as an NHL referee. Brad Meyer joins us on the DFO Rundown. Brad, congratulations on a 23-year career. Welcome to the Rundown. How are you?
I'm real well. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
So we got to go back. 1999 is when you played, when you had your first NHL game. But I want to go back before that, Brad. I was looking up things. I think you started officiating like in the WHL in 87. So when did you actually start officiating as a youngster?
I guess I got my first taste of it when I was about 12 years old. It was kind of a funny story. We were on our way home. My younger brother, who's 4 years younger than I, he had an outdoor hockey game after one of my practices on a Saturday morning. So we were driving back home. This was in Saskatoon. And we got to the outdoor rink, he got on the rink, and there was no referee that showed up. So they knew I had skates in the car, and they asked if I wanted to do it. And I had no idea what I was doing, but it was basically chase those guys around for an hour. And I made $4. So I thought, hey, this could be all right to make a little
$4,
little candy money for me there. So that was kind of the first little taste of it. So I did a few more of his games that year, and then went to a clinic the following year and registered and kind of started pursuing it from there, worked my way up year by year. So it's been a long time, but that's kind of where it all started. So.
And you were a hockey player, of course. And I think you played junior B a little bit. You were going to, was it university, Brad, where that's when you decide, okay, I can't do everything. I can't be a university student. I can't be an official and I can't be a hockey player. So you chose the one that you felt you had your best chance at.
Well, yeah, it was more of I gave up hockey because that was what I was the worst at. I wanted to get through university. That was something that I always wanted to do. I was 17, my first year of university. I played one game of junior B in Saskatoon, actually with the Dundurn Wheat Kings in the, I don't know, I think it was the Sask Junior B League, whatever it was called at that time. And I'd started university and was officiating basically up to AAA midget. So my playing wasn't that far ahead of where I was already officiating. So it wasn't really that difficult to give up the playing side of it because just the time balance to be able to take full-time classes and officiate, because the travel at that level, even already with officiating, I was working, like I say, some AAA midget and some senior hockey in Saskatchewan. So traveling outside of Saskatoon already. So that's kind of where I gave up the hockey part of it. I still like to play a little bit of rec, and I hope to play next winter again. So, but yeah, had to give it up, and no regrets. That's for sure.
So the whole time you were working your way up though, Brad, doing Western Hockey League games, you were also, I believe, a City of Saskatoon firefighter. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I got to, after I finished university, I had already applied to get on the fire department twice in Saskatoon, and I got down to the final interview. It's quite a lengthy process. I for whatever reason, it became kind of my passion and my pursuit while I was officiating. And then the third time I applied, I got down to the final interview again, and actually Mark Wheeler, who was a linesman with me in the National League. We were in each other's wedding parties, and his older brother, Jim, was a captain at the fire department. And he finally went to the chief and said, look, what does this guy have to do to get on the department? So I don't know if he had some pull or whatever, but my third time through, I got hired in 93 at Saskatoon Fire Department and left there the end of August of 98. And I have to say it was one of the toughest decisions I ever made. Still, some of my closest friends are on the department there. It was a fantastic job. It was a great, I guess the size of the department was really good too. It was only about 250 guys. So everybody knew each other. It didn't matter what hall you got transferred to or shifted around to, you knew the guys. It was like almost like a small team everywhere you went. So it was really hard to leave. In fact, my dad he couldn't believe that I was leaving that job to go and try and chase pucks, because he said, you know your holidays, you know what your salary is going to be, you know everything. So why are you leaving that? But I had to chase the dream. So,
yeah. Shout out to another department member there in the city of Saskatoon, Jeff Shen, the father of Braden and Luke Shen, also a member there. Brad, you know, you mentioned the decision that you had to make. What was the process like while you're also working your shifts to continue working through? You started doing obviously some minor league games, and you were part of the officials association, trying to break through to be a full-time guy in the NHL. Walk us through, for those that don't know, what it's like trying to get from sort of part-time NHL official to full-time. And I guess that's part of what helped make the decision a little bit easier for you.
Yeah, I was busy for sure. The way our schedule was set up at the fire department, we worked 2 day shifts, 2 night shifts, and would have 2 days off, 2 days, 2 nights, and then 6 days off. So at the time we had no kids. My wife, Colleen, was teaching at Walter Murray in Saskatoon, and she coached volleyball in high school. So we really didn't have a home life. When I was, even if I worked day shifts in Saskatoon, the Western League would try and work me in Saskatoon or even Prince Albert, which was only about an hour and 15 minutes away from the house. So I'd maybe have to leave. I'd get somebody to come in early and cover the last couple hours of my shift so I could get to PA. And then on my 2 days off, the Western League would kind of do the same thing. They'd work me close to home. And then when I had my 6 days off, then I would travel, and the Western League and the National League kind of would work together, and I'd go work 5 games in 6 nights and be gone on those days off. And you know, one trip it might have been for the Western League, and I would go out west and work Portland, Seattle, Tri-Cities, back to Seattle, Spokane, and then home. And the next 6 days off, I might go out east and I'd work some IHL and American League, Chicago, Milwaukee, Peoria, in that area, and then come back home again. So, you know, and the guys in the fire department were really good. They loved to hear hockey stories. So, you know, if I had to swap shifts to maybe get an extra day off, I would do that. And then I would pay them back, you know, take shifts for them in the summer to kind of make it all work. So it was a lot of juggling of shifts, but like I say, the guys were so good. And a funny Jeff Shen story too. It's talk about a small world. My dad coached Jeff Junior B.
It's
back
crazy.
In the old Saskatoon Wesley's days, and then we had fire hockey where we had our own dressing room and stuff at one of the local rinks in Saskatoon. And both Braden and Luke used to come out and skate with us when they were just like 8 and 10 years old. And they were both fat little turds that came out and skated with us. But, you know, they were on the ice constantly and such good guys. And to this, right up until the end, they were so good to me. Every time I touched the ice, you know, hey, how's it going? Dad says hi. Rita says hi.
They're total just such class good guys. Family.
Oh, total. Yep. They were so good. And you know, it's nice to have that connection going way back for sure.
So Brad, my understanding was you were actually a linesman in the WHL for your first 5 years. Then you transitioned to being a referee. How'd the transition go? And when you called a few games as a ref, is that when you said, okay, it's ref or die now for me?
Well, I was refereeing other stuff like CIS and Junior B and senior hockey and stuff. And I was working in the Western League as a linesman, and I was quite happy to do it. In fact, I thought if I was going to try and pursue anything further than that, lining was maybe the way to go. And then after, I think it was my fifth year working lines, Rick Dirksen at the time, who was in charge of the Western League, called me and said, well, how do you feel about refereeing in the Western League this year? And I said, well, I hadn't really thought about it. He goes, well, you're going to. So that made the transition pretty easy, because it was either that or I wasn't going to work the league anymore. So, you know, and kudos to the Western League too, because they supported me. I mean, there was obviously growing pains, because the lining and refereeing are, even though they're similar jobs, they're not the same. So, but yeah, it was like, I guess having that, the little bit of a refereeing background with those other leagues helped the transition to referee full time. And to be honest, once I did it, it was probably easier, because it was, the focus was refereeing only at every level. So it made it a little better, a little easier afterwards.
What do you, like, obviously there's different roles you're calling, penalties, you know, the linesman's offside and icing and different stuff like that. But the physical toll as a linesman, I know maybe not as much now because there's not as many fights, but is the physical toll as a linesman much more than it is as a referee?
Yeah, they're the linesmen, I mean, they are a lot more involved physically, like whether it's just scrums or, you know, plays at the bench, they're constantly in the middle of those guys making line changes. And I kind of equate it, the refereeing, being a referee is like being a head coach. You kind of got to be a jerk sometimes to the players and stuff. And the linesmen are almost like assistant coaches in the aspect where they can kind of smooth things over. They can talk players down and calm them down and maybe keep them from being so mad at us. And they're like the peacekeepers. Their job is so multi-level, multitask. They don't get enough credit for what they do. They can make a referee's job so much easier. The best linesmen make the referee's jobs seamless some nights. So,
yeah, but they also skate a lot less. No, I'm just kidding. But seriously,
yeah. Well, it's just different skating. When we went from one referee to two referees, we went from pursuing the play all the time, so skating forwards into the play, tight turn, and then come back and try and catch it at the other end. And now, with two referees, the referees tend to do a lot more backward skating and let the play come at you instead. And mm-hmm. the linesmen, they're all over the place. They're forwards, they're backwards, they're chasing down icings, they're working the blue lines going across the ice. So those guys are a lot more agile. We're just more forwards, backwards, and those guys tend to be a lot more agile, which can be tough because some of those guys are such big guys that what they have to put their bodies through and jamming on some of those little planes to get to the next city. I feel sorry for them some days.
It's a lot. So I wanted to ask, you know, Jason mentioned 1400 and some odd games. You know, you've done and seen almost everything, an all-star game, a bunch of outdoor games, two Olympics, a Stanley Cup final. What goes into the decision-making process? Like, how do you know it's time? Is it a conversation between you and the league? How does it work?
Yeah, through the league now, they have a succession planning process where, you know, they approach guys that have been around a long time, usually late 40s, 50 years old, somewhere in there. There's really no magic number. Now it's just a discussion. They'll approach guys and say, hey, what are you thinking? And this is kind of what we're thinking. And basically it comes down to you agree on a number. I was fortunate enough when they approached me, we came up with a number of five more years, which at that time put me at the end of last season. And then with all the COVID craziness and everything that's happened the last 2 years, I was fortunate enough that Stephen Walkham gave me another year. So that was why I was able to work this year as well. It really is a process now. It's a give and take, as opposed to, you know, the old days where they would, you know, a guy might not even know that he was going to be done. And all of a sudden they would come to you and say, hey, next year is your last year, plan accordingly. So it's certainly for the better now, where guys can plan and, you know, financially, and if there's things you want to do, you know, special trips you want to make. I was fortunate enough. I had a trip to New York this year. I had requested to be in New York for a few days. I was able to take my daughter, who's 16 years old and is a dancer. So, you know, we saw three Broadway shows and the Rockettes and Harry Styles concert. So
awesome.
I was father of the year for a weekend. And that's part of that succession planning process, is they try and make things, happen for guys that are on their way out. So
Brad, in talking to a number of officials, just in prepping for this, our chat, they had said you're kind of the dean of the guys in the West, that you took a lot of young guys under your wings over the last number of years and sort of, you know, helped along in the mentoring process. I don't think enough fans or casual fans of the game understand just how much turnover there has been in the officiating world over the last number of years, guys retiring. You mentioned the succession plans. There's been a lot of injuries as well throughout the last number of years, COVID. You've had to work a lot of young officials into the game. You know, tell us why that was important to you to help these guys out in terms of paying it forward.
Well, it's a pride thing. I mean, as an official, as an NHL official, I was proud to do it. It's jokingly this Western group, right? We're tight with each other. A lot of us work together in the Western League. Guys from my era, we all work together in the Western League. The guys that came up now, the younger guys, they all work together in the Western League. But in the middle, there was a group of guys that worked with both of us. So for me, you know, I see these young guys come up and they're proud of being from the West, and they're proud of where they came from. So it wasn't a conscious decision I made, but just being proud. And that's not just with Western guys. We have a tight knit group, but like all the young guys that come in, you want to make, if those guys look good, our group looks good. And I think that's important. We get beat up enough in the media and social media that, they might not, sometimes they just need a confidant to go and have a beer with after the game, and they're down and, you know, they think they screwed up one call or two calls. And my biggest message to those guys was, listen, like, get through tonight. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. Somewhere else, somebody else is screwing up. So the talk will be about them. And tomorrow we move on and go to a different city and make a mess there. So, again, a lot of it is just pride. You want our guys to do well so that the group looks like they've done a good job as well.
Brad, I've always found, you know, it can definitely be a thankless job, because, you know, when you go to Edmonton, the fans are Oilers fans. When you go to Philadelphia, they're Philly fans, right? And when there's a call that goes against their team, they don't like it. If it's a call that goes in favor of their team, they'll never be like, oh yeah, that's a great call. It's never a bad call when it goes in favor of your team. And that's just, you know, there's very few people that are there to cheer on the officials. It's a pretty thankless job. But, you know, over the years, like, how do you learn? Like, obviously, I know there's the pride, and I've talked to, you know, numerous officials in different leagues and sports over the years. Obviously, you want to be good. You never want to impact a game. But when you do make a call that, you know, is it instant that you know what's wrong, or do you have to see video? Like, how did that work? And if you knew you made a wrong call, would you just skate over to a team? Hey, guys, I missed that one. And was that the best approach? What did you do on the odd chance when you made what you thought was like an egregious error?
Yeah, well, believe me, if any of us make an error, like, you know, right away, it's like, oh, your arm, sometimes your arm is barely up in the air and you're like, oh, if I could chew my arm off, I would. But, you know, that's all part of the process. If you, honesty, I always found was the best policy. And, you know, that comes with the respect back and forth with the coaches and with the players. You can say to them, like, you know, look, you know, I know, even before they show the replay 24 times on the Jumbotron, everybody in the building knows that you screwed it up. And you just tell them, like, look, I don't know. I got blocked out, whatever. I thought the stick hit him in the face. It obviously didn't, you know, and that's on me. You know, hopefully you guys kill it off, but, you know, it's hard. You don't want to have that as your go-to every time your arm goes in the air, where you're telling a coach or a player, yeah, my bad, I screwed that up, because that gets old pretty fast too. But you can't, especially nowadays with the iPads on the bench, and the players know right away. So you can't BS anybody. You have to be honest. I think the important thing is you can't use it as an out every time as well. But I mean, it's going to happen. We try and make the game fair, try and make the game safe. And I think that that's what the players want. And most of the players realize that, hey, mistakes are going to happen, and they can live with them as long as they're not four a period and 10 times a night kind of thing. So I the honesty part is very important.
Now, what about the camera angle? Because to me, having talked to so many officials, positioning is at the forefront of what's going to make a great official. Now, if you're in good position, more often than not, it can help you. But the camera angle that we see as viewers at home is not the angle that the official on the ice is seeing. Right. Has there ever been conversation to have like a ref cam? Because then people would say, oh, here's the angle he saw. That's why the call was made.
Yeah, well, we actually tested out a couple different companies had ref cams available for us. So we tested them out, but there were a number of things that were not perfect with them. They were super heavy to begin with. And it wasn't the camera itself that was heavy, but it was the battery pack that that they had to use with them, because they couldn't record the, just have a stick camera and record it and use it after. They wanted instantaneous. So anyways, the battery was the issue with the helmet cams. They were so heavy and cumbersome, but it is hard to compete with the number of cameras that are in the building. There's, you know, I think in the one final I worked, there was 30 cameras the last game. So it's important. And that's what our bosses preach now. Is sight line. So work hard to get to a good spot on the ice where you still might not see the play correctly 100% of the time, but you give yourself the best chance to see it. So, and it's been an evolution with the four official system to try and find what the sweet spot is for as far as positioning. And I think we're getting there. I mean, it's an ever-changing process, but I think that we're getting close to being where we need to be the majority of the time, especially with the guys that are such good skaters now, that they can get in and out of traffic really easily and do a great job of getting into where they need to be.
Brad, how difficult was it working during COVID? I mean, full marks to everyone on the front lines who was out there every day, but the officials, once hockey started up again, not a lot of people were traveling, masks on planes the whole time, everything that goes with it, the daily testing, but also just from a social perspective, in the sense that, you know, four officials come to a market, they all kind of scatter, go their different ways. No one really travels together, but you get to a city and instead of getting dinner or something, you're kind of locked in your room the whole time.
Yeah, it was a pretty lonely existence. I'm not going to lie. Especially for our guys, that's our social network, is our group of guys. And, the good thing is we didn't miss any work. We were able to do it, but like you say, it was tough. You get into a city, you order room service, you order, delivery food, and you ate it in your room. You might see a guy in the gym for 10 minutes in the morning and then you wouldn't see him till lunch. We could walk to someplace together outside and pick up food and back to the hotel and eat it on our own. And, then like you say, travel was, we were completely on our own. If we had an example once last year, there were four of us that were traveling from Montreal to Ottawa, and we had four rental cars driving one behind the other down the highway. So it was a lot of time solo, a lot of Netflix, a lot of books, but it was tough. And it was tough on the Canadian guys in the aspect that you saw the same seven teams. They were sick of seeing us, we were sick of seeing them. I have to say the coaches and the teams were outstanding and treating us like, not like enemies. We were all in it together. I know the guys that went to the US, they had different battles to fight because it was that constant cross-border with the testing, worried about getting COVID in the US and getting stuck down there. You know, some guys had 60-day road trips where they didn't come home. They left Canada. They were Canadian-based officials, but we had too many Canadian-based officials, so they had to go to the US. And, they were gone for 2 months. It was difficult. It was nice this year to kind of get back to a little bit of normalcy for sure. We had the little blip in December, January, where COVID kind of reared its head a little bit more again. But for the most part, we were at least had that social aspect back again.
So you guys are road warriors. You've seen and done a lot of really cool things. I bet you have a lot of memories. I was told to ask you about the Sochi Olympics and bus ride.
Yeah, well, to preface that story, it was a US-Russia game, and I was working with Marcus Finnerberg, Swedish referee who had came over and worked in the National League for a little bit. Ken Wheeler, who NHL officiating manager, was the video goal judge. So a play happened where the net was up and off its moorings. Russia scored, but it doesn't count because the net is not in its proper position. So anyways, we come together, we have video goal judge. The goal is nullified. I literally had the least to do with the call on the ice. Anyways, they disallow the goal. Russia doesn't win. The next morning, I want Terry Gregson, who was there with the NHL at the time, pulls me aside. And he's like, have you talked to Colleen? No, what's going on? He goes, well, there's rumors online that you've been abducted and murdered. And I said, what are you talking about? I had no idea. So anyways, because I'm a dual citizen, I've got US and Canadian passport. They had me listed as a US official on this game, which the Russian people didn't really care for. So we ended up, there was all kinds of, there were protests in Moscow. There was a big poster with my likeness on it in downtown Moscow saying that they were going to turn me into soap. And we had a bus ride. We were going to a spa the next day and the bus, he got lost and he ended up in some garbage dump trying to turn the bus around and he was backing the bus up. So all the fellas were thinking this bussy was going to dump me in this garbage dump in the middle of Sochi. So it was quite the story. It ended up being way more press and stuff over there than it needed to be. It was really uneventful. And looking back now, we can laugh about it, but pretty scary at the time, especially being kind of marooned in Russia.
Now, Brad, I know offensive linemen have like a joke that if an offensive lineman gets talked about too much, like he gets ripped on. So when you're getting stories about you, are like, is it in the official fraternity, is that the same deal? Like, are you just hearing it now from your buddies because you're the story?
Yeah, not really. I try and keep it like, I'm pretty low key. I try and fly under the radar as much as possible. So and most of those guys know that. So I'm sure that anybody that hears about stuff, they'll send me some shots, but I'm the old guy, so I can give it right back. I'll find some dirt on them too. So
Brad, when you go through that career and you know, we go back to 1999, it's in October, your first NHL game, like, you know, at what point in the WHL even, or when did you start to think like, you know what, hey, like there's a chance here I can go to the NHL, like young players in hockey. When was your all of a sudden, hey, I think I got a shot here?
Well, for me, like the National League used to have a program called the trainee program, which was basically for officials that they had earmarked as potentially having a chance. And so I was invited to training camp in 94. So I was part of the trainee program from 94 to 98, but that was in addition to working at the fire hall and doing the Western League stuff. So I was doing a little bit of minor league stuff in the IHL and the West Coast League and American League. So at that time, you know, there's always the thought, well, maybe I can do this, but there's no guarantees. And I tell a lot of young officials too, it's luck and timing. If you're the next guy in line for the next position that comes available at whatever level, you might have to just be lucky to get that spot. There could be three guys, but you're just a fraction ahead of those other two guys for that spot. And you know, so for me, I was fortunate that CHA and the Western League gave me every opportunity for success. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to move up as I did. But you just never know. So you got to kind of just grind and see where it takes you. I think I told you, Jason, when I talked to you before, that there's so many other opportunities at the amateur level for guys to go and do, you know, world juniors and world championships and, you know, TELUS Cups and all those things that you can't take those opportunities away from guys. Like it's fantastic avenue. It's even as a side gig, it's an awesome thing. It's an awesome, if you can stick it out, there's so much to it.
Can you give us a breakdown of like, what's an average schedule? Like exclude the COVID years. Are they this year or 2015? Like what's an average schedule for an official? How does it like, does it set out the start of the year? You know, like how many road trips you doing? How many games you doing? How long you going? Where do you go?
Well, for us, you know, you're ramping up training in August because training camp for us is usually that first week in September. It's always out east. We've had it in Buffalo. Well, the last 6 years, I guess it's been in Buffalo, but we've been in Blue Mountain, Fort Erie, that general area. Just so that's usually 5 or 6 days out east at training camp. You come home, you might do 5 or 6 exhibition games. The newer guys could do, I think, up to 10 exhibition games, and that you might be close to home. You might be gone for 2 weeks. There's really no rhyme or reason. And then regular season starting that first week in October, our contract is for the referees do 73 games, linesmen do 75. So that goes from, you know, that first week of October right up until first part of April. And then, you know, if you're fortunate enough to work playoffs, it can be, if you work right to the finals, that's another 2 months. So, you know, it's probably just a regular season year. It's probably close to 120 nights in a hotel, 130 nights in a hotel in those 26 weeks. And, you know, for referees tend to travel a little more than linesmen. So probably close to 150, 160,000 air miles. Yeah, the travel never bothered me. The hardest part for me was missing stuff at home, like missing the odd birthday and missing kids' Christmas concerts or hockey tournaments and those sort of things. So, you know, I am looking forward to being a little more involved in their lives now for sure.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to ask, Brad. What's next? You're a young guy, got a full life ahead of you. I know this wraps up the on ice portion of your career. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I really have nothing planned. We've got a place in northern Saskatchewan that we spend our summers at, and I'm looking forward to getting up there and kind of downgrade and settle down for the summer and see what happens in the fall. My oldest guy is a volleyball player at University of Calgary, so follow him next year a little bit. My middle guy is an up-and-coming official, and he's working AAA midget and that, and he's probably going to get a chance to do maybe some Alberta Junior next year. So follow him around. And my daughter's a dancer and going into grade 12. So I teased her and told her I was going to drive her to school every day with a big gold chain on and drop her off in front of the school. But she said otherwise. So yeah, I'm just looking forward to being part of that. And, you know, if Colleen and I want to take off and travel for a week in November, we can do that.
You got a lot of miles for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's awesome, Brad. Hey, we always like to finish up what we call rapid fire. The only rule is you have to answer the question.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll start with something. What was Brad Meyer's drink of choice, either alcoholic or non-alcoholic, after a good night or a tough night?
Cold pint of beer.
Cold pint of beer. All right. Lagers or ales?
Lager.
Lager. Okay. Who was your referee mentor?
Bill McCreary. I worked my first exhibition game, regular season game, and playoff with Billy. He was awesome with me.
Best advice he gave you?
Sometimes you got to be a dick.
Love it.
What do you feel is the best asset a referee needs to have to be successful?
Probably two. Like we said earlier, honesty and communication or rapport, just being able to, you know, sometimes you have to give it to a team, but you have to be able to communicate back and forth.
Player who made you laugh the most on ice?
There were a few. Steve Ott was funny all the time. Matthew Barnaby was funny. Kevin Sawyer was sneaky funny. Yeah, those guys are, there are lots. Like there's so many one-liners that can't be repeated that we get to hear in the trenches that are, you have to giggle.
Any player that you two just butted heads on ice?
Sean Avery.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Because there's guys you'd see in the heat of the battle. Was there a coach who, you know, just you knew was super intense, and then after the game was just, he would calm down? Who was the one guy where you maybe gave them a little bit more rope when they were yelling at you because you just knew that was his personality?
Well, John Tortorella was like one of the best, classiest guys ever. He was the first coach I threw out in pro hockey in Rochester, like in 1996. And he honestly came down to the room after the game and said, Brad, if we ever cross paths again, you'll never have a problem with me. I deserved it. And he was true to his word right up until the last time I saw him. He was, you know, he would get mad. He would be intense. And it was all said and done as soon as the final buzzer went. He was a class guy.
So where's the line? What has to happen for you to kick a guy or a player out of the game?
Well,
what did Torts say?
It was a pretty vulgar rant. And I think, to be honest, I think he was testing me. I was a young guy and his team wasn't playing very well. And, you know, it was just, I had had enough and I had to stick up for myself a little bit being a young guy. And I think that's the fine line that officials walk now, especially new guys or newer guys, because you have to earn your respect from the coaches, but you also can't fly off the handle every time they yell at you. So you got to, you know, sometimes you got to develop that rapport a little bit before you get to the point where, you know, the coaches cross the line and it's time to send them into the room a little early. And, you know, sometimes it's not about the coach yelling at you for anything you've done. It's a grandstand moment. They're trying to fire their team up. They're trying to, you know, they've already pulled their goalie once and he's yelled at the D-man once. He's yelled at all the forwards. So now it's you're next. And he's just trying to send a message. So a lot of times that's all it is.
You played hockey, so you're a fan of hockey. Yeah. Is there a play or two that when you were on the ice, you were just like, oh my goodness, that was unreal?
Well, the Sedins were ridiculous. Like lots of times you'd be standing in the end zone and watching those two guys zip around and cycle. And like, you get hyper-focused on those two guys and like, oh man, wake up here. You got to watch what's going on in front of the net because they were amazing every time they were, especially in the offensive zone. It was just ridiculous to watch those two.
I see some sticks behind you on the wall. Are those signed sticks from NHL guys?
Yeah, I was pretty fortunate the last 3 weeks of the season. There were some guys that I had been around, you know, through the wars with a long time, some older guys that signed sticks, you know, Thornton and Spezza, and then both the Shen boys for sure. They sent me sticks. Sid signed a stick for me. And, you know, Todd McClellan, whom and I grew up together in Saskatoon. We played baseball together and hockey against each other. And he brought a stick down that the whole team had signed. So, you know, little stuff like that. You know, my wife bugs me, like, where are you going to put them? But it's pretty neat to get that kind of stuff just because that respect finally shows through at the end. Not that I didn't think anybody respected me anyways, but it's pretty gratifying to get little things like that for sure.
What will you miss most about being an NHL official?
You know, to be honest, the 3 hours or 4 hours at the rink, just with the guys where you're not dealing with, you know, late check-ins at the hotel and 2 hour lineups at the airport. It's just you and the guys and you're talking hockey and the game's over and you have a beer and you went to battle for the 3 hours. And I'll miss those guys a lot. They're, you know, a lot of relationships over the years where, you know, some of those guys I'm not going to see maybe ever, you know, unless we're traveling in the same circles, but I'll miss the guys.
Did you ever think about having a call like Brad, like Wes McCauley, you know, fire up in-house on the mic?
Wes is Wes. I don't think anybody can do it like Wes. And that's not my cup of tea at all. I'm a little more low key. Wes, give him a microphone and he runs with it. He's the same way at training camp. I mean, he can announce what we're having at the buffet line at training camp and he gets everybody clapping. So that's just not my thing.
Well, Brad, congratulations on an incredible career, over 1,500 games, regular season NHL. And that doesn't include, as Frank outlined, the Olympics and all the years in the Western League and, you know, junior hockey, senior hockey in Saskatchewan. Do you think you'll ever ref another game outside of a charity game? Like if somebody came to you and said, hey, we need you for a junior game or something, would you do another one?
No, probably not. And my skates are going to go into my hockey bag instead of my ref bag. And that's it. I am going to try and help out here locally. You know, with, especially seeing my middle guy, you know, pursuing a little bit, I'm going to try and be a little more involved now that I'll be around a little bit. I've talked to a few people about trying to help out that way next winter. So that'll be the extent of my officiating, is just trying to help out and mentor some of those younger guys.
What type of player is Brad Meyer?
Not very good. stay at home D-man with a muffin shot from the point.
Well, at least we know you can move, Brad.
Yeah, we'll try.
Well, congratulations, Brad. Enjoy retirement and fatherhood, and good luck with the gold chain. You show the gold chain and the ref outfit. Show up at high school. That'll be a seller for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll be a fan favorite. So thanks for having me, guys. It was a ton of fun. I wish you guys nothing but the best. So thanks a lot.
Congrats, Brad.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Brad Meyer, man, that's a lot of years. And Frank, how about that? 73 games for a ref, and you have no home games, right? Like, that's what they travel way more than teams.
If he's in Calgary, yeah, he would have the odd home game every now and again. And I think they do try and work those in, but they're far and few between. Pretty much, there's a lot of guys, actually, believe it or not, I don't know if you know this, there's a lot of guys that don't live in NHL cities, so every game is a road game.
Yeah, and I should have said no home stands, you know, because sometimes you could be home as an NHL team for 10 days or something. Like, that would be rare. It's not like they're going to let Brad work like four straight Flame games, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the only nice thing is you do get some breaks. Like, you could be on the road for 12 days and then you have 7 at home or something like that. Like, there's a nice back and forth. Some trips are short, some trips are really long. But I really feel for those guys. Like, COVID was a real grind. Like, you heard some of the, and especially working in Canada, it was a lot different than working in the US, I would imagine. But still, they were held to NHL protocols that the rest of the population isn't. So the US may be fully open in some respects, no mask, no everything else, but you're beholden to everything that the NHL is telling you to do. And you've got to uphold that because you can't get the other guys on your team sick so that they have to be able to continue to work.
Yeah, no, it was tough for a lot of people, but you're right. Definitely more isolation as a single referee. So that would be challenging for sure. So we wish Brad all the best, and it's always good to get the ref's perspective on it. Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk on a Friday. Ty, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, and I'm ready to roll with another edition of Buy or Sell, delivered by our friends over at DoorDash.
Ding dong.
Shout out to Liam.
Yes.
Rundown DD gets you 25% off and no delivery fees on your first order. Guys, I'm starting with this. Cam Talbot, since the Minnesota Wild picked up Marc-Andre Fleury, Talbot has a 923 save percentage and he's 7-0-3. Fleury's save percentage is 905. So I'm going to say Cam Talbot will be the game one starter for the Minnesota Wild. Buy or sell, Frank?
Sell. They traded for Marc-Andre Fleury. I think they're going to play him.
All right.
You know what, Ty? I might have to buy on that. For game one, Marc-Andre Fleury is the ultimate teammate. I think, you know, their head coach has been a great communicator all year long. And, you know, it might just come down to, you know, the numbers against St. Louis. I haven't looked at that directly, but, you know, when you got one guy who's 923 and hasn't lost in regulation, it's hard to overlook that.
The NHLPA did their released their player poll the other day, and there were some ones in there about, you know, who would you rather face, your goalies. But I want to get into a couple of the more different ones with you. The Bell Center was voted as having the best ice in the NHL. I want to ask you guys, because, you know, that's where the players work, but where you guys work, which rink in the league has the best press box, Frank?
Pittsburgh is really good. I'm trying to think of the ones that are larger and some that have really good views. Some are just so far away. Like, you have no chance of seeing anything. New Jersey is like that. Like, you feel like you're in a different zip code. I've been to every NHL arena now, except for Detroit. I would say Montreal, you know what? Good ice, good press box. It's a gondola that hangs around the rink. So if you look down, it's sort of like Calgary. If you've been in their press box, Tyler, you look over and you're like right over the ice. It's pretty awesome.
Cool. I always felt it was far, though. To me, honestly, I'm going to go. I like Minnesota. I've always liked Minnesota's press box and Colorado, actually. But, you know, I did play-by-play games there for many years in NLL, and I love both vantage points. Actually, from a vantage point perspective, San Jose's rink, because when they built, they forgot the press box for the announcers.
That's so actually built one of the worst.
Yeah. No, the press box for the reporter stinks, but if you're the broadcaster, Frank, they have it on the top of the lower bowl. it's unreal. You're so much closer. So it depends if you're the broadcaster, San Jose. If you're the writer, though, definitely not, because you're way up there in the corner. It's like Nassau Coliseum when I did my first game there. I was like, geez, I need some binoculars up here, right up in the corner. It was crazy.
I realize these also aren't buy or sell questions, but I figured they were good, so I'm rolling with them. The other one they asked the players was, if you could trade places with an athlete for a day, which athlete would you trade places with? And we'll say for a game day here, so you get the full feel. Jason?
Do you get the feel of the bank account or no?
Well, yeah, you get one. Hey, man, salary's based on per day on the roster, right, Frank? So
yeah, one game day check.
To me, I'd want to do something that you can throw a ball. I can hit a ball. Like, I slam dunk once in my life, and it was barely, right? I would want to be like a LeBron James, where, you know, when you can leave from and you're just flying through the air, one hand, two hand jams. So yeah, I would take LeBron, because you're also, you know what? Yeah, you're going to get, as Frank alluded to, a pretty good paycheck. So I'll take LeBron. Maybe Steph, though, because he could shoot.
You got to pick a hockey player.
No, he said athlete from any other sport.
Oh,
you could.
But I want to know what hockey player you want to be.
Oh, well, if I was going to be it, well, I'd want to be Ovechkin. Scoring goals is the best. Yeah. And, you know, you're a physical, like, you're a power forward who scores goals, and he just seems to have a lot of fun. So I'd be Ovi.
I think I'd want to be Connor McDavid.
That's fair.
I'd have to lose 100 pounds to get there, but
yeah, well, you'd be super fast though, Frank. That's
the thing. Things. Like, what would it be like to wake up and be like, I'm putting on rockets right now on my feet.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
I would pick a professional golfer on a Sunday at any tournament. You get to play a sweet course. You get a crowd around you. Unreal.
You'd probably be shitting your pants for 3.5 hours though.
Yeah.
So nervous. I don't like when there's seven people on the tee watching me, let alone a few thousand in a gallery, let alone with a few million dollars on the line. You know, you always think of, you know, you watch players closing out their rounds and you go like, oh, why are they even showing this on like the 18th hole? Yeah. Guys, you know, that are sort of well out of the mix. Those putts that they're hitting that seemingly don't matter are worth a few hundred grand. That people don't even realize.
Hey, Frank, I'll tell you a quick true story. So I'm not a great golfer. And this happened back in 2007. Chichi Rodriguez was doing a golf tour in Edmonton. I got Chichi to golf in a foursome with Chichi.
And hilarious guy, by the way.
And he was funny and he was unreal. I'll tell you what he did. But so we had a tee off on the first hole on this course. And there's literally like 1,000 people and they're lined up like you would at a real course. I was literally shitting bricks because I'm like, I'm going to shank one here. I'm going to kill someone. So I'm just focusing the whole time because I was not like a great driver. I'm just like, hey, just focus. I must have done, I don't know how many warm-up swings, and I got to go third and I hit it. And I just, you know, wasn't a great deep drive. I was never deep, but I hit it straight. That was easily the greatest single 1 second feeling of my life. Cause I was like, I didn't shank it. I didn't slice it. Here we go. And later on, Chichi Rodriguez, when the round was done, he did an exhibition for, and this is not a lie, this is a true story, cause I saw it. So he takes his 7 iron and he hits one with the fade, right? So it goes off to the right, cuts back in the middle. And I'm like, oh yeah. And then he hits another one, you know, 10 seconds later, saying that he can basically cross them either way. He does it 3 times. The third time, 150 yards down on the floor, he hits the first one, hits a second. The balls collide in the air at 150 yards. The greatest thing I've ever seen. And he did it on purpose.
That's insane.
It is insane. Like that guy. And I asked, like, he was like, I wasn't a really good putter. And I'm like, what? Like, this guy was draining putts on our course from like everywhere. But he goes on tour, I wasn't a very good putter.
All right.
Next level.
We're going to wrap it up with our points bet bonus question here. The Stanley Cup odds are out over at Points Bet, live in Ontario as well. So if you're out in Ontario, you can maybe throw a few shekels down, as my friend Bag Milk would say. I'm going to rattle you guys off sort of the bottom of the Stanley Cup odds here. You have the Kings are 60-1. The Stars are 50-1. Preds at 45-1. Caps at 35-1. Blues 22-1. Penguins 21-1. Rangers 17-1. So are the Wild. Oilers at 16-1. Which one of those teams is being overlooked by the sports books and the public?
I can't say that any of them are being overlooked, but if I was going to place a long shot, it would be the Minnesota Wild at 17-1.
Yeah, I'd say the Blues at 22-1 for a long shot.
Well, then we guarantee that one of us is losing in the first round.
That honestly, yeah. I've already like, I don't even know what the other series are. I'm not sure they'll be harder to pick than,
but
than that one.
That they're telling you that Vegas obviously thinks Minnesota is the favorite in the series though.
No, that's true. So we'll see, but they don't even know they are today. What if St. Louis gets home ice advantage tonight?
Does it matter?
Who knows? No. All right. Yeah. That's going to do it for another edition of a Buy or Sell delivered by DoorDash.
Awesome. I know that was a long pod, so thanks for listening to us, Brad Meyer. Some great stories. Enjoy the final day. When we talk to you on Monday, it's going to be playoffs. We'll finally know who the matchups are. We'll have a complete playoff preview coming up on Monday's pod. Frank, have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.